powered by Red Media in partnership with TSN. It is season 5 of the Ray and Greg's Hockey Podcast. And this is our post-Stanley Cup edition of Ray and Greg's, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey. Have you tried Canadian Club Ginger Ale, a crisp, refreshing alternative to beer? Well-balanced flavors of ginger with the subtle notes of rye and spice. The new formula, 30% less sugar, 20% fewer calories. It is flat-out delicious. That is Canadian Club Ginger Ale. Well, Ray, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and that got you back to your beautiful home in British Columbia, and here I am.
Yes.
In Vegas. I know I'm in Vegas. I'm trying to think of the Marriott I'm staying at, but I can't remember. Was a trek. I'm not going to lie. I'm not complaining. Last time I complained about the travel. I can't complain now. We're in the home stretch. But went Fort Lauderdale post game 7 to Houston. Had a three-hour layover in Houston. Then made my way to Vegas.
Best
part of all of that, Ray, a veteran move. Now that I'm post 55 years of age, I'm making wiser, smarter decisions. So
okay, I'd like to hear this.
Check into the hotel at about 8 p.m. local Pacific time, right?
Sure.
I wouldn't say my phone was buzzing, but there were a few stragglers here, agent scouts that were, looking to see if I wanted to get out for a beverage, something like that. Didn't respond to any of them. Crawled into the wrapper at 8:45 p.m.
Yes.
Because I knew I had local, I had to do Ottawa radio at 5:15 a.m. Pacific, Montreal radio, and then the podcast. So I'm fresh. I'm good. I ignored all of these people.
That's
good
thinking.
Got a good rest, and here we go.
Yeah, you can do that tonight. There'll be lots of time for that.
Sure.
For me, I flew through Houston as well. I can't believe I didn't run into you. Except there was 20,000 people in that airport. It is the biggest airport. I couldn't believe it. I've been through there very rarely, but it was jammed. But anyway, got home, and of course I get home, and Tammy's not here. I mean, why would we be in the same house? That would be.
Why would you? No, that makes no sense.
Yeah, that wouldn't be. So she was in Toronto yesterday, and then flew to the draft in Vegas.
Yeah.
So she got there probably not too much later than you. Really solid parenting. You know, I was looked after the kids for dinner and all that stuff. It's about 9:40, and I said to a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old, hey, don't be up too late. I'm going to bed. So yeah. I have no idea what time they went to bed. I have no idea. I mean, they could still be up for all I know. And but I slept great, me and Ollie. And I wouldn't say I'm refreshed, but man, it's nice to be home.
Nice. Yeah, and you're officially off the clock now, right? Aside from Rand Riggs. No draft, no free agency. Good for you.
I sent my last tweet yesterday. Thanks to people for listening, which I really, and there was this picture taken that I never keep anything, Dregs. Like I really have very little memorabilia. There was a picture taken of Paul Maurice hoisting the cup.
Yeah.
And the way it was taken, I'm just in the side of the picture. And there's there's got to be 100 people in the picture, and I'm going to keep it. It was instantly one of my favorite pictures. You can just see the elation on Maurice's face, and everybody gathered around to see him lift the cup. It was awesome. It was a remarkable series, and so my last tweet went out in thanks, and the next one will be in October.
Yeah.
And so I'm on my golf season starts at 9:46 tomorrow.
Ah, good for you. Well, well earned. Okay. Well, we'll dive into obviously a terrific series, Game 7. Maybe not always edge of your seat stuff, although Game 7 was, but I'm talking about the series overall. We'll get into that in just a moment. Some of the other stories around the hockey world, including some international stuff, which I know you're going to be interested in, involving the draft eligible players, Canada versus the U.S. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Part of headlines brought to us by Tim Hortons. Retro donuts, Ray, are coming back. Yes. You can buy them individually. Six packs are available, and they include a number of things. Two other Tim's all-time classic donuts. The apple fritter, which
that
takes me back so many years. Might even have been my first introduction to actually drinking coffee in a regular. There was nothing better than a Tim's apple fritter and a small coffee for me. That was a treat, even as a young guy. And the Boston cream. Did you have a preference when it came?
Oh,
when it
comes to the classics.
Yeah,
the fritter for me. Oh, yeah, fritter championship material.
Yeah, so they're available now at Tim Hortons. Okay, game seven, look back. We're not going to dissect the game from beginning to end. Probably wouldn't take us that long, but let's just start at the beginning. How crucial do you think the Florida Panthers getting that first goal was to kind of set the tone?
It did. I thought the first goal was only important in game seven if Florida got it, or rather if Edmonton got it.
Yeah.
Because I thought if Edmonton got the first goal, Florida was going to get knocked on their heels. And with everything that had gone on, it would be a real challenge for them. But they got it, you know, they get the 1-0 goal, then 2 minutes and 17 seconds later, Edmonton ties it up. And then I thought, so at that point, my thought right away is that, like, it becomes a dumb thing to say, but the next goal being critical, because basically it happened so fast, the next goal was going to be the first goal. And I thought it was really important that Florida play from the lead. In the last eight game sevens, this goes back to 1994, the team that scored first won game seven.
Yeah.
And the average number of goals was just a shade around four. So, like, it wasn't going to be 6-5.
Yeah.
So, the premium is, it's tight. It's, there's just not a lot of room. And I felt tense the entire game. Like, you could feel the tension. Like, where I get to stand, which is just the very best, like, you could feel it. It wasn't like guys were scared. They were just tight and nervous and focused. It was really cool.
So we're sitting up in the press box, and by we, I mean Jamie Noodles McClellan, Frankie Corrado, James Duthie, the cast, right? Frankie's sitting beside me, and it might have been right after the anthems, and he looks down and he points, and he goes, look at Ray down there. He goes, my God, do I envy him. He's 100% got the best seat in the house. I mean, it had to have been buzzing down there.
Well, even like in warm-up, like – usually McDavid comes out and he's just flying, and he's kind of like the only one that's going at that pace, which he was again. Like, I mean, it was normal. There were so many guys just flying all over the place. I kept having my eye out to see if somebody was going to run into somebody else, like on their own team. They were so buzzing. And then for the first time in the series, I love this stuff because it's so stupid. It's just ridiculous. So Stuart Skinner does his twirl around the ice, and then he always comes and stops and just faces into the opposition's end. He does it every game. He gets into a little bit of a crouch, hands on his knees, and stares forward. Anthony Stolarz usually stretches over in front of the penalty box. Stolarz came across the ice and stood directly in front of Skinner, and he had it and stood straight up. So Stolarz is 6'6". So when Skinner was looking, all he could see was the ass of Stolarz's pants. And he just stood there. And I thought, how ridiculous is that? All he's trying to do is just a little bit get into his head, maybe anything, you know. But, oh, I love the gamesmanship of that. So he must have stood over there and got, you know what? Next game, I'm going to go stand in his way. He's not going to see anything. And I mean, it doesn't really change much, but from the start of that game, like the second the puck hit the ice, I thought it was it was an awesome night. It really was. It was a great, well-played game.
Yeah. What do you think of the game-winning goal, the Reinhardt goal? If we want to dissect and get super critical, Skinner was screened on the play, right? But that's the type of goal that he didn't allow in game 4, 5, and 6. But is it being super critical, over the top critical, to say that that's a puck he should have stopped?
Well, it's not over the top critical, because he should stop it. And he would probably be the first guy that would tell you, yeah, I should stop that. But here's why being a goalie sucks. If he makes 10 great saves and gives up that goal, you don't remember the 10 great saves. You remember the goal. The Oilers lost because they scored once. They didn't lose because Skinner gave up one goal. I mean, I said it on the highlight of the Reinhardt goal. I said, for the 1,000th time, this has happened. A puck that almost goes into the net at one end ends up in the other 5 seconds later. Like, if you remember the start of the play, Kulikov saves that off the goal line. He ends up, his face is in the net. And, you know, Verhaeghe, who had a terrific game seven, I don't know what it is with that guy. When the series is on the line, time after time, that guy scores. That guy gets involved. He hadn't scored since game one.
Yeah.
And he gets a goal and an assist, but he wheels out of the zone, finds Reinhardt, and it's in the net. And so I do think Skinner should have stopped it. I don't think, you know, I guess you can hang the mantle of that on top of them, but they lost because they scored one goal. I mean, just even Dregs, think into the third period. There was the play with McDavid where he's in front of the net and Forsling makes a great defensive play. Then Montour gets his stick on Hyman, and Lostarinen and Bobrovsky do that circus dive, and somehow the puck stays out of the net. Bouchard hits the goalpost. Like those are all things on another day. They go in the net, but it was Florida's time.
You know, Connor McDavid seemed poised going into game seven to have a historic performance, right? Why wouldn't he, given everything that had been built up and how terrific he was, especially in game four and five, and for me, deserving of the Conn Smythe. And I don't know. I mean, I guess we can kind of bundle it all together here. Was it more about how Florida responded and defended against McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers than it was Connor maybe not finding that kind of supersonic sort of gear that we see him have in regularity, and then follow it up and package it all together with a thought on whether he had to go out there and accept the Conn Smythe Trophy? I didn't think he did. I understand his disappointment, but I'm more interested in what your view is on this.
Well, one of the oldest axioms in all of sport, not just in hockey, is defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, defense won a championship. Yeah. It really did. 2 years ago, the Panthers gave up 273 goals against.
Yeah.
This year, they gave up 200. Their whole focus was, we will not give up goals. We will not give up easy chances. Well, in games 4, 5, and 6, they gave up 18 goals. Like, they got shredded.
Yeah.
And so everything that they were doing to help stymie McDavid and the Oilers, including getting great goaltending, got washed out to shore.
Yeah.
When they got lit up in game four. And I thought they got spooked, the Panthers. I thought they played almost a letter perfect game seven. And there just was no room for McDavid to get going. I saw only a few times where maybe the puck could have got to him a little quicker and he had some room to be able to skate with it. But for the most part, Florida was able to forecheck enough that Edmonton couldn't break out. And as soon as Edmonton loses the breakout quick, McDavid loses the space and it gets really tight. So the other portion of that is small teams do not win. They don't win. Big teams win. There's no room to go. And so I understand, you know, the terms we hear all the time, play driver, and he's plays big for his size. Well, that's great. But if you're 5'8" and you go into the front of the net against the 6'5" defense, when you're going to lose every time.
Yeah.
I was, and I did. Like, you lose those battles because physically you're just not able to get in there. And I think that, not that Edmonton's small, because they're certainly not, these are big teams, is that you know, McDavid's trying to get inside. He didn't have the usual help from Draisaitl, who was really quiet in this series. And, of course, we're finding out he was playing with a pretty good nick. And so I think they just were able to smother him a little bit in the last two games. Game six, they didn't need him. The Oilers won. Game seven, geez, they sure did need him, and it just didn't get done. As for the Conn Smythe, I think the right guy won it. If it would have been Barkov or Bobrovsky, I don't think I would have thrown my hands up in the air either. Probably Bobrovsky for me, ahead of Barkov. It's funny, people argue only to make it fit their argument. They say, you know, it should be McDavid because it's not just the final series. And the reason it's not Bobrovsky is he got lit up in games 4, 5, and 6. Well, wait a minute. If it's not the final series, it's not the final series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Bobrovsky was brilliant for the, you know, for the first 18 games of the final or of the playoffs. 42 points, a remarkable playoff, 11 points in the final. I don't have a vote. I would have voted for McDavid and I would have had Bobrovsky second. As for him coming out, Dregs, you're in the rink. I don't know if you were busy coming downstairs at the time when, you know, as soon as the horn hits. Yeah. So I'm standing there. I got nothing to do. We go to commercial and all that stuff. And so you got to think of it from a sheer logistics point. Buzzer goes.
Yeah.
Panthers throw all their stuff on the ice, all over the ice. They go celebrate in front of their goalie. Fans are throwing those bloody rats on the ice. So there's rats all over the place. The end door by the Zamboni opens up. And they're getting ready to bring all of the stuff out onto the ice for the Stanley Cup presentation. There's the handshake line.
Yeah.
Right? All of that takes 10 minutes. Then by the time they get everything set up is another 5 minutes. Yeah. So now you're at 15 minutes. So McDavid's been in the locker room probably at this point, 6 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So he's going to be the only guy that comes back onto the ice to skate over to Gary Bettman, shake his hand, pose for one picture, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it doesn't, the logistics of it just don't work. And let's face it, we're not talking about an every year problem. We're talking about once in a never problem. Like, you know, the last time I think was Jaguar in 03.
Yeah.
And before that was Hextall in 87.
Correct.
So if they know that a player like McDavid is going to be right in the running, because they find out with about 8 minutes left who's won the Conn Smythe, they could easily have plans for a podium downstairs just outside the Oilers locker room. He could walk out. They could present him with the trophy there. They could show it on the big board. Mm-hmm. That would be the way around it. Otherwise, I think he's got no obligation in my mind to be out there. It's an awkward thing.
It is.
I don't think there's a right way to do it so everybody could be happy. And he's going to go out there and get booed because the people in Florida want somebody from their team to get the Conn Smythe, which is, of course, totally understandable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, you've just been kicked in the in the ass here. The most devastating thing any of us could imagine in the world of sport. And now you're going to go out there and pick up a trophy. It doesn't matter. And it's of the, hey, here's something new to complain about crowd. It gives them something else to get a little juice on.
Well, speaking of juice, there's going to be a lot of that coming out of the stories that we're going to speculate on that are going to be talked about and written coming out of Edmonton and the forecast of change, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to jump in and say something, but I'm going to show my patience. I'm going to show my maturity because actually I'm not. I'm going to jump in and be immature and say one thing. I love the season. I love the final. It was amazing. It's too long.
Yeah.
June 24th. It's too long.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Dregs, what happened an hour before game 7?
I don't know. Warm up, in fact. It wasn't even an hour. Yeah.
If that's happening, A, you know it's too long. B, is no trade is ever complete until the league does the trade call.
Yeah.
Why don't they take their phones and put them on silent until after the game? There was no reason to approve that trade in warm up or an hour before.
Yeah.
It can sit there like a bad odor if everybody wants and they can all talk about it. Announce it the next day when the Kachucks are diving in the ocean.
Yeah.
And they're
Yeah.
dumping
Yeah.
beer off the elbow room balcony, which was phenomenal.
It was.
I thought that was absurd that that trade got announced right before the Stanley Cup final, in my mind, anyway.
I didn't get an explanation for it other than there was some reasoning, because I shared with, you know, the people involved in that trade that you're likely going to get a call from the commissioner's office, because it's never a good idea to not want or try to upstage a major event, but to do it. And apparently there was some reasoning behind it. But anyway, okay, Oilers.
Yeah.
I guess we'll start with Leon Draisaitl, and that's not to push the future of Kenny Holland to the back burner. But if you're Jeff Jackson, who's essentially the head of hockey operations now,
right,
regardless who your general manager is, I think it's a safe assumption you park the most significant offer you can afford on the table of Leon Draisaitl on July 1st. Here's what we're willing to pay you in term and money. No matter what that is, 13 plus, whatever it is, just put it out there. But also recognizing that Leon has just come through a war, right? He's going to need time to just decompress, and probably thinking of a contract extension with a year remaining isn't top of his list of things to do for the foreseeable future. So how would you manage this if you're the Oil? I mean, would you do exactly what I say? You just put it out there. You're a huge part of our future. We recognize your value. We're willing to pay you. And then just step aside and let him digest?
I do all of that except make the offer.
Okay.
And I say to his agent and to Leon, we're ready to talk the second you are. We understand this. You've just gone through. We're assuming you're exhausted, beat up, and you want a vacation. Just call us when you're ready to start. So whenever you start is July 1st to us. When you call, I will have my number ready for you to listen to. That's how I would approach it. I would basically give him the power to say, you just tell us when you want to get going. And leave it up to Leon, because, you know, it's not like in quiet moments they're not thinking about it. It's not like the Oilers don't need till July 1st to put the offer together. They've already done it. I mean, like, what do people think managers are doing when the Stanley Cup is going on? They got nothing else to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is a boulder rolling downhill at them.
Yeah. Like,
you know, you got to do something about it.
Yeah.
And so that's how I would make sure there was no possible confusion as to my desire to sign him.
Yeah.
And I would also make sure that he understood that I'm waiting for you to be okay to start talking.
Right. Right.
And don't forget the offer that they can make. It, because no matter how the money is totaled up over 8 years, which of course is nobody else can give him 8 years, they'll be able to, in their finance department, through talking to the league, they'll be able to get a pretty good guess as to where the cap might go in the next couple of years.
Sure.
So the percentage of the AAV that's on the cap at offer time will not be the same as when that contract takes effect.
Yeah.
And so that's something that Leon's people have to calculate and the Oilers calculate, and he won't be rubbing nickels together by the time this is over.
So to play devil's advocate, what if the message from the Draisaitl camp comes back and says, we appreciate it, but Leon is not going to consider a contract extension at any point this season. He just wants to play out his year. He's not saying that he won't extend with the Oilers. He just wants to play out this year. Then what do you do if you're management?
You sit down, get a favorite bottle
of CC.
Take a long swig with a big rock ice, a chunk of ice in it. And you go, boy, I hope we win this year. Yeah. Like, if he says that, what are you going to do? Trade him? Not a chance.
Yeah.
Not a chance. And so here's the other thing. What if that were to happen? Now we're just being silly here, but right. What if that were to happen? And next July 1st,
right,
they have a press conference and behind the curtain walk out Connor and Leon together with matching length deals.
Right.
And everybody goes, I mean, like, if he doesn't want to sign right now, he holds every card in the deck.
Yeah.
He doesn't. The only card the Oilers would hold is the eighth year.
Yeah.
That's it. And if you've ever played war in cards, and when you were a kid and you have one card left in the deck, eventually you have to go, you win. And so that's kind of where the player is if you're a player like Draisaitl.
All right. Well, again, there will be, endless speculation on all of this.
Sure.
And so much of it will be unfounded. It'll be more opinion than it is anything based on fact. But it's something that we're going to be chewing on, I'm sure, in our coverage this week here at the draft in Vegas. Kenny Holland, as I tweeted on Tuesday night, I mean, there's a strong chance he's not making his way to Vegas as general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. And an equally strong chance that he's not coming back to the Oilers. You know, his contract is expiring. He's put in countless hours of managing this team to a place of where they came within a whisker of winning the Stanley Cup. You can't come any closer. And right. Given where Kenny is at in his life and his career, Hall of Famer, man. We know this. It's happened already. But what more does he have to prove? And if he wants to step away, if he wants a fresh opportunity, if one is presented, he's earned all of that. Earned all of that. What is it? I mean, is there anything about this story, this side of the story, that bothers you? Or is this just the evolution of a guy who's put in time with an organization and earn the right to do whatever he wants at this stage of his life?
Well, I mean, there's lots of sides to it, Dregs. And I think you start when Jeff Jackson was brought in as the head of hockey operations, that it was pretty clear where this road was leading. And it was the most awkward of circumstances, given that Jeff had been hired. He was Connor's former agent. The Oilers start 2-9-1.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a mess. And I think with, you know, I know there's a segment of the population and in any city that, you know, is really critical and of their management. And you have to take a half a step back at the end of someone's tenure, which is where you are in Ken's place. And look, where was the team when you got here? Where was the team when you left?
Yeah.
What were the good moves? What were the bad moves? And any general manager will tell you, you can ask anyone, and we're lucky we get to talk to them. They're really a bunch of good guys most of the time. And they'll tell you, if I can make 3 to 4 good moves for every 2 bad ones, that's a good deal. Because they don't all work out. And some of them are big misses and some of them are little misses. Like signing Jack Campbell was a miss.
Yeah.
The other free agent goaltender out there that year was Darcy Kemper.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, why didn't you bring in a lower profile guy if that's all that was out there? That would be really hard to say to Connor McDavid, hey, Mike Smith's got to retire. We're bringing in a guy that we're not sure can play 15 games. Mm-hmm. Like that can't happen. And so that was a miss. Philip Broberg, Matthias Ekholm, grand slam.
Yeah.
What an amazing pickup. Pickups that were kind of overlooked or looked down at when they were made. Matthias Janmark, Adam Henrique, Connor Brown. How'd they do? Doesn't matter what happened in the middle of the year when the time was biggest, they were terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I know Ken really well. I'm not, you know, to be honest here, I'm not disappointed for him. They got to the Stanley Cup final. And it would be, you know, obviously they were one goal short of overtime, and hey, that's the way it goes. But I asked him during the year about, you know, are you ready to step aside and go play golf? And his answer, like in 1 second, was no. Like the fire to be there still to build and build a team, and it's still there. Now, it's not going to happen in Edmonton anymore. I mean, June 30th is the end of the contract, I think, for all NHL contracts.
Yeah.
And I do know that he's not talked to anybody else. That he said, when is I won't talk to anybody until the Oilers are finished. Now, that could have been in the second round, but it wasn't. It was June 25th. So I would assume being a general manager next year is probably out of the realm of possibility, because every team has got a GM at this point. So I don't know what he's going to do. I do suspect, well, not I do suspect, I'd be shocked if he's not back in hockey, because he wants to be. And his experience and his leadership and his track record would make me think it would be pretty easy for a team to be interested.
And look, anybody who knows him as well as you do, and those that have worked closely with him, will say this, echo exactly what you said. You know, at least he can be an advisor or a consultant for a management group or a club, but there are some who are still very much in the know, think that he's going to have a tough decision to make. How involved does he want to be? Because the belief is out there, given his history, the quality of the man, that he's going to have big job opportunities. Big
job opportunities. You know what? That's a good point, Drakes, because if you move into the consultant or advisor role, you're just an ear for hockey ops at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're not quite in, but you're not quite out.
Right.
And that'll have to be a decision that he has to make with, you know, with his family too. And that, you know, do I really want to be in again if the opportunity pops up, or do I want to take an advisor role, or do I not want to do anything this year and just see where the world leads me?
Sure. Yeah. And we also have to look at Edmonton's hockey ops. And, you know, clearly there's going to be some changes. You know, is Jeff Jackson going to occupy his role as head of hockey ops? Is he going to become GM? You know, what's going to become of Paul Coffey? You know, did a great job on the bench with the Oilers. There's speculation he might have a different role. Mark Hunter's name is out there. Stan Bowman's name is out there. I mean,
and all the people that you never. Yeah. And all the people you don't hear of.
Yeah,
that are in the management tree, their contracts are mostly expiring, I believe, at the end of June, or they have 1 year left. Like it's a time of transition, and that's a big job for Jeff Jackson. Like you gotta get your people in place, and of course, the lateness of the end of their season and the speed that the draft is happening. I think this is probably a pretty good indication where you see like how much the scouts matter.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're running the draft.
Yeah.
Like they're, you know, Jeff will be there to guide them.
Yeah.
Or to help maybe have a organizational path.
Yeah.
But you can't change course now. Have been scouting all year. They've put their lists together. You get through the draft and then you get going on the next thing.
All right, let's shift gears here a little bit. And I do want your thoughts on the Hall of Fame class that's been introduced for 2024 in just a moment. But some big news that I tweeted while the podcast was going on as we record here on Wednesday morning, right, from Vegas and BC.
Oh, is that what you were doing? Because I thought you lost focus.
Yeah, I was a bit distracted. I was looking at my phone typing away here. So big news from the Canadian Hockey League and USA Hockey's development team. So the National Team Development Program, right? So what these two groups have announced is a Prospects Challenge, a two-game series featuring the top NHL draft eligible players versus the National Development Team from the U.S. So you're talking about the three leagues in Canada, the Ontario League, the Western League, the QMJHL, with their top prospects head-to-head with the development program team in a two-game series. They haven't announced where yet. Those details will be announced at some point this summer, but it's a three-year package, and this will replace the Canada-Russia series, obviously based on world events. That wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. I like it. I don't know if the scouts and hockey management is going to like it because it's one more addition to their already busy calendar, but you're talking best on best. For me, that's a good thing.
It will be for the scouts because they'll get a, and the teams by extension, of course, is they get a look at players playing against opponents of their, like, of their capabilities.
Yeah.
You know, when they're in their league, sometimes you put, you know, a team might, a really good kid might be on a team that's not very good. So you're always trying to project what could he be like if he was with better wingers or a better defense pair, or what would this goalie be like behind a more structured team? Well, they'll get to play this set, and I assume it'll be played at a pretty high level. Like, this will be quite a showcase for those kids. And I like it. I know I'll be watching. I know most people, will be interested. Right. And,
You think Gammy will be interested or not? I'll just let that one.
No, the scouting department, I can assume. First I heard of it was when you told me, and I was like, oh yeah, that's one more thing on the calendar for sure. That that'll be a big, when are they planning? November?
November. Yeah.
So that'll be, not sure, just think of this though, when, but Drakes, just you like to play the devil's advocate. So you're talking about the best players, right?
Yeah.
The best draft eligible players. Some of those players, so they'll leave for probably close to a week by the time that they go to a day or two camp, game, day off, game, get back. A couple of weeks later, they're off to World Junior camp. Right? Like the teams are going to lose. Some teams are going to lose really good kids.
Yeah.
For quite a significant portion of that season. And when you were mentioning it, I'm like, ooh, that's kind of interesting.
Well, here's a sidebar. And maybe I should have made this more clear in the tweet. But it's CHL top prospect players, top draft eligible. That doesn't mean they're Canadian. They could be Europeans, right? Playing in the Canadian Hockey League.
Right. So, oh, I get it.
Yeah. So that's interesting too, right? So it adds a more international flavor to it. So
one other question on the other side. One other question you could dig into USA Hockey for. So is it just the development team, or what if there's a stud USHL player?
Yeah, I think it's just the development team, but that's, interesting. We're going to iron out some of these details
here. Well, you better get to work here. I don't know what you're doing in your luxury suite at the Marriott in Vegas. But,
there's only so many characters that I can tap out into a tweet. So you're right.
I know. Isn't it? How about when you send a tweet and some of your responses are like, what about this? What about this? You're like, I'm not writing a novel, man. It's a tweet. This is what I got.
Wow. I don't know how much time you spent on social media, hopefully not very much at all yesterday, but as soon as the 2024 Hall of Fame class was introduced, man, everybody comes out of the woodwork. And what I don't appreciate about, hey, if you have an opinion, of course, I think Alex McGillney is a Hall of Famer and should be in the Hall of Fame.
I do too. I do too.
I mean, he gets there at some point. Patrick Elias, I mean, his name was thrown out there. Hall of Famer? Sure. Absolutely. Maybe Curtis Joseph, Jen Botter, go down the list of all the names that the experienced media attacked the Hall of Fame committee over yesterday. Hey. Like, I was like, and screaming for transparency, suggesting that these people don't do any research, don't put any thought into it. They get together on a conference call or a Zoom call. And they go, let's finally put Jeremy Roenick in the Hall of Fame. He's waited long. Right. Like, it's just utter pure nonsense. And it's not only disrespectful to the committee who invest countless hours in debating and going through all this, as you know, it also takes away from the class that is being inducted into hockey's Hall of Fame. It does. And that class of Roenick, Datsyuk, Shea Weber, Natalie Darwitz, Chrissy Wendell-Pohl, the Builders, Colin Campbell, and David Poile, in their own right, each is deserving, right? I mean, it's just such a galvanizing sort of experience every year when the class is introduced.
Yeah, no, rarely do people comment on the deserving players that go in or builders. The one thing I think the Hall could do better is they could outline the process a little more clearer so people would understand it. So right. All the names that you mentioned that did not get in, I'm assuming they were all discussed. I'm assuming so. To get in, there's 18 people that are on that committee. You need 14 votes. And if you don't get the 14 votes, you're not in.
Yeah.
But you can see where the math gets a little tight because you only have a certain number of votes. So which one of Pavel Datsyuk, Shea Weber, or Jeremy Roenick doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? And the other part that people don't understand is that the men's and the women's totals of players do not intersect.
Right.
It's a maximum of 2 females, a maximum of 4 males.
Right.
The builders do not intersect with the players. So you can have the David Poile and Colin Campbell, they can get in on the builder side. That does not impact the players going in.
Yeah.
It does not.
Yeah.
There's 2 women, Natalie Darwitz and Chrissy Wendell Pohl. They do not impact Jeremy Roenick.
No.
And Pavel Datsyuk.
And I don't think everybody understands that. That's a very good point. Media people don't understand that, who are openly critical of the process.
And so I think that's one thing that the Hall could do much better.
Yeah.
And to think that it's all done on a conference call with 10 minutes or a few hours, it's not how it's done. And I know it's not how it's done.
Yeah.
I know a couple of the committee.
Yeah.
And it's not a secret.
No.
I don't know. Is it a secret who's on the committee? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it? And it should be a day of celebrating the people that got in, and then tomorrow start bitching about the people that didn't. But
right.
It doesn't. It's just not the way it works. I think Alex McGillney should be a Hall of Famer.
Me too.
I really
do. Yeah.
I do think Jeremy Roenick and his totals, if you look at his totals,
mm-hmm.
just look at his totals on the ice, and you tell me that Bernie Federko or Pierre Turgeon or Hall of Famers way in front of Jeremy Roenick, and I'll disagree with you.
Yeah.
I think Jeremy's probably a little bit of a polarizing guy because of the whole package
of
JR.
Of course. Yeah.
But if you're just looking at it as a player, he was, in his years, he was one of the very best players in the game.
Yeah.
And there's no denying that. By the way, I got to say, Pavel Datsyuk was, when I retired, he was without question my favorite player in the NHL. And when I was broadcasting, I always had to put a note in my head, this game is not a Pavel Datsyuk highlight show.
Yeah.
So I'd catch myself, oh, let's do a highlight of Pav taping his stick. Like, who the hell cares? But I loved the way he played the game. I did. I was first ballot, he's in, and I was kind of happy he was.
Yeah. And look, and not that it matters. You know, it's not you're not thinking of emotionally inducting players into the Hockey Hall of Fame. But for me, that is part of the experience. It's no different than being on the ice they're celebrating the Stanley Cup final as they did, this past Monday in Sunrise. And you can see firsthand, the emotion and the investment from not only the players, but their family members and all that. So when I see Jeremy Roenick get the call from the Hall, and he can't even speak because he's just overwhelmed by the emotion, that matters to me. That matters to me, because clearly Jeremy has thought about that call and probably wondered if that call was ever going to come.
Yeah. And year after year thought about it, because from year 4 on, once you retire, you're eligible. And it's probably maybe this year, maybe this year. Then you start looking at the class and you go, oof, there's a lot of good
It's getting
guys this
tough.
year. Yeah, but maybe next year. And I know that when Cammy got called, she was in California with her family. I was at home. We were just in different places. And I knew the time that the calls were going to come out. You know, they always come out at the same time. And I remember just sitting around here, around the house, waiting and hoping that she was going to phone me. And when she called, she could barely speak. You know, so I assume it's the same for
sure
for every player that and builder that gets recognized and gets to, you know, gets to have that call. It's an amazing thing.
Excellent. Well, do you have anything else? Because those are the headlines brought to us by Tim Hortons.
You asked and we listened. Tim's Retro Donuts are back again for a really limited time. Enjoy classics like Walnut Crunch and Dutchie, and now including Sugar Twist and Blueberry Sour Cream. Get them before they're gone. It's time for
Tim's. About hockey? News of the week?
About hockey or no?
No. Yeah, really. Well, headline stuff.
Yeah, no, that's pretty well it. Hell, it was a Stanley Cup. It's the cup's awarded.
Yeah.
It's a good thing they polished up the cup because it ended up in the ocean. And I'm sure that was really clean. It looked like that. I will say, not to make this about the Kachucks again, but you know, Big Walt is a character in the game. Keith is a he's a character in the sport. And so when I see Barkov in the back of that golf cart with the cup, and they're riding down Los Olas Boulevard, and you look up at the front and Walt is driving. I'm like, I don't know why that's.
He's a cartoon character. He's literally a cartoon character.
Oh, I just loved. I'm like, man, they are having a time. And congratulations to them.
I walked by the elbow room, as I said earlier in the podcast. It must have been around 9 a.m. Eastern, somewhere around there. And they're hanging off that balcony. And the one thing that struck me was the big stogie that Walt had hanging out of his yap. And I'm thinking, he's probably had about 14 of those the last 12 hours.
What about when they were dumping beer out of the cup to the guys waiting below? That had to hit
one
those
guy
guys.
Almost drowned.
It hit him like a ton of bricks.
It was wild being around there. It really was.
Oh, I bet. And that's, if you've never been to the elbow room, it's literally on the corner of it's like, it's not very big. There's two stories to it. It is a legendary place in the hockey world, I'm sure for other stuff too, but man, that place would have been rocking. When I went by there, in my cab at 4:30, there were a lot of lights on. Nobody had gone anywhere at that point.
Well, Sunday night, I went with the TSN crew. You know, again, we had a nice team dinner, and we're going to go for one beverage and then call it a night. Big game 7, getting ready on Monday. That place was jammed with Oilers fans. And
oh, yes. Yeah.
Like, Dan Brown was there. I mean, excuse me. I think McDavid's father and brother Brian was there.
Yeah.
So it was just wild. But guess who made arguably the biggest rookie mistake of the series? Me, of course, right?
Oh, what? How would you do?
Didn't know we were going to the didn't know we were going to the elbow room. So we went out for like a patio dinner. I had a golf shirt on, I had shorts on, and I had flip flops.
Oh. How are your feet?
The flip-flops going into the elbow room, men's room, was bad call.
Yeah. You can't high-step that enough.
Anyway, no chance. They did not make the trip from Fort Lauderdale to Vegas.
You can buy a new pair there.
In the garage. All right, there you go. Those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons. Our interviews on Ray and Driggs brought to us by Canadian Club 1858 Original. We've got to ask Ray and Driggs anything, but you know what? We've taken enough people's time here, so I think we're going to park that for...
How many more do we have for the season?
Well, one for sure, as we know, I don't know. We'll have to talk to the boss, Rashog, and see if we need one.
Is he still looking for his luggage?
He's got a lot of stuff going on, including they came out of there last night out of Fort Lauderdale. And I'm always nervous when I book a flight near the end of the day, because you know what's going to happen, yeah. Right? It's a roll of cancellations. And their flight, as late as it was also delayed on top of that. So I'm assuming they got to Vegas, but I haven't heard from him yet this morning. So we'll discuss that. Worst case scenario or best case scenario is that maybe the morning of July 2nd, we wrap up free agent frenzy and, yeah, call it a summer. I don't know.
Okay. That seems, well, when are you off to the cabbage?
That'd be July 2nd. As soon as we finish,
I thought you were going to say like the 5th or something.
No. I'm playing in a Skins and Fins golf tournament at Prairie Lake Lodge. Beautiful executive 18-hole golf course on the shores of Lake of the Prairies. I'll be in that tournament on the weekend. What is that? 6th, 7th, 5th?
Yep. Well, I'll keep looking for my cabbage invite in the mail here, and so, you know, maybe one year it'll come. You know,
it'll come. All right, buddy. You're teeing it up tomorrow. Thursday?
Yep. Got some cleanup stuff that I'm going to do. My last batch of expenses for the year. Poof, off they go. I'm going to do that today. I get Ollie's right here. He's looking for a little grub.
Yeah.
And it's holiday time. I had an amazing year. It was so fun to be on the ice of Game 7. So lucky to do it. And it is great to be home. It's the best.
Just like a decompression instant, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as you walk in the door, we're all good.
Yeah. And one of these times I'll see Cammy back here. And
won't be for a while because she's got some work to get done here in the next week.
Well, it's draft.
Yeah.
Then it's free agency.
Yeah.
And then it's development camp.
Oh, Jesus.
Bing, bing, bing. Hey, hi, bye. See you later.
Yeah. You know? How are you loving that job as an executive in the National Hockey League now?
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well,
gotta
enjoy
grind,
your downtime.
Got to grind.
Recharge. Well,
and Drags, have a great time in Vegas. Remember, 11 o'clock is a good bedtime out there.
Oh, I'm not thinking 11 o'clock. Just kidding. No.
Are you kidding me? Once you get in with the crowd and the group and it all starts buzzing around,
yeah,
you won't be to bed early. Who are you kidding?
Please. All right, buddy. Well, we'll connect again here in the next week or so.
Yep. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy, and we'll talk soon.
And thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs and make the pod possible, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, perhaps our final time, the 2023-2024 season. Stay safe, everybody.